And you're listening to KTOO in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Crumry. The city and borough of Wrangell has suspended the search for 12-year-old Derek Heller, who is the only person left missing from the November 20th disastrous landslide. This follows 15 days of searching and clearing landslide debris by the Wrangell Volunteer Fire Department, numerous support volunteers, canine scent dogs, and local equipment operators. Cale Casey is a spokesperson for the Alaska Interagency Incident Management Team. He's been at the landslide site with responders and says the teams all came together with one mission.
The search has been absolutely monumental. It's a very dangerous slide path. They mitigated a lot of risk. They operated incredibly safely for days, 15 days in a row, day and night. A lot of courage to be in there, inclement weather, obviously very emotional.
Searchers found the remains of five people. 65-year-old Otto Florschutz and the Heller family, 44-year-old Timothy, 36-year-old Beth, 16-year-old Mara, and 11-year-old Kara. They also found one survivor, 63-year-old Christina Florschutz, Otto's wife. The slide was 4,000 feet long. The bottom of it stretched into the water, which complicated the search. The slide around the destroyed homes was about 450 feet wide. Casey said searchers had to work through, quote, endless amounts of clay and slippery surfaces, end quote. He says responders reached all accessible areas above and into the intertidal zone.
They want to find Derek and bring closure to the family. When you exhaust all your search areas, when you circle back and check them again, when you're doing the kind of work they're doing, there is a point where your search areas have been searched, and that's where they got.
A press release from the city and borough of Wrangell says search and rescue volunteers and a canine scent detection team will be available if there are any new leads or evidence in specific areas in the future. Juneau residents have until Christmas Day to provide input on the potential environmental impacts of the city's proposed compost facility. Last year, the federal infrastructure spending bill earmarked $2.5 million in funding for the design and construction of a municipal facility. The city says it could cost upwards of $7 million. Diana Robinson is an environmental project specialist for the city's Engineering and Public Works Department. She says the facility could divert over a fifth of the waste going into Juneau's only landfill each year. That's needed. The privately owned Capital Disposal Landfill is only expected to be last for another 20 more years.
The assembly's goal is to, divert as much from the landfill, both for the environmental impacts, but also to extend the life of our landfill.
The facility is slated to be at the former Lemon Creek gravel pit. According to an assessment released by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, no significant environmental impacts are anticipated. Juneau resident Lisa Doherty runs Juneau Composts, a privately owned compost facility. The business has been leasing CBJ land in Lemon Creek since 2019. It's a short walk away from the proposed site. Doherty is concerned about what the new facility will mean for her business and fears it could close her down. She created a petition asking the city to put out a request for proposals and ideally choose her to collaborate with on the design and construction process. But the city is waiting until the project is built to find a partner. And Doherty says that's far too late.
You know, I can't continue to operate my business in this unknown if someone else is going to get that contract in a few years. It puts me in this space where I can't continue to invest in my business unless I know if I'm that partner or not.
Robinson says the city is aware of Doherty's concerns, but she says it's too early in the process to begin seeking out a private business to contract with.
We're very confident that we're going to be contracting it out to a private entity to run, just like we do with our recycling and our household hazardous waste. But really right now, what it boils down to is that we're just nowhere near ready for something like that.
The facility has a long way to go before construction begins. The city estimates it won't open to the public until 2027 at the earliest. Using old recordings, Tlingit language experts are documenting and compiling hand gestures used by birth speakers that have meaning in the context of the language. KTOO spoke with language scholars and has the story. Tlingit scholar Jeff Lear noticed gestures an elder would make when telling stories when he was young.
When she was talking along and talking about a person sitting, you know, you take your right index finger and put it erect, and then you crook it about halfway. It looks like it's bent at about a 90-degree angle.
Lear leads the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Tlingit Gesture System program. He's been studying Tlingit for nearly 60 years. He took American Sign Language classes in Chicago, and when he came back to record stories with elders like Elizabeth Nyman in the 1980s and 90s, he began to see these gestures as an integral part of the Tlingit language. Robbie Littlefield has been documenting the gestures as well. One elder told her these gestures were often used when people were hunting and didn't want to make much noise, or when they were across the bay from each other, in sight but not in shouting distance.
So he showed me how he raised one arm up in the air and the other hand made a movement toward the fingertips of the arm that was up so that there was movement and to say that the tide is rising.
Littlefield is an educator in Juneau, teaching Tlingit to students from middle school to the college level. And she said these gestures could open more pathways for students to absorb the language.
So when you learn a new word or a whole sentence, you do that physical motion or movement or expression on your face, and it locks the word into your long-term memory.
Lear said that since he started recording gestures, he's documented about 100 of them. But he doesn't think the number stops there.
I'm sure there are many, many other gestures out there. And what we would like to do is to find the people that still know and use those gestures and add to our corpus of the Tlingit gesture system.
Lear said this gesture system could allow learners to use less English to fill in blanks in the classroom setting.
The idea is to develop the gesture system into a true sign language so that it can be used to teach Tlingit in the schools without recourse to English.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is sponsoring the program using reparations funding from the Presbyterian Church's recent apology to Juneau's Tlingit community. SHI said in a press release that they plan to investigate whether there are similar gestures and associations in the Haida and Tsimshian languages, Haatkil and Smalyik. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Alaska's response to the national housing shortage has been different than other states. In many areas across the country, new housing is going up rapidly to meet demand, but not in Alaska. In a recent presentation to the Sitka Chamber of Commerce, Nolan Clauda explained that Alaska ranks 45th out of all states in per capita new housing construction, building about 2 new units per 1,000 people on average. Within the state, the Mat-Su is at the top of the list for new construction, and not far behind is Southeast.
Sitka actually builds a lot more housing per capita than anywhere else in the state besides the Mat-Su, which is something that's really interesting. This is all adjusted for population. Sitka is building about 4 units for every 1,000 people. I found it interesting that Southeast communities are on the top there. Also, Haines, Ketchikan, Skagway are above the statewide average, too.
Clauda is the director of the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development in Anchorage. He traveled to Sitka to participate in the Chamber's fall speaker series on housing. Most of the new housing construction in Sitka is the result of an expansion by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. Overall, Clauda said that projects like employer-built housing and new subsidized housing for seniors will improve housing markets, but not necessarily the bottom line for buyers.
Whatever the cause, though, I think that's really good news overall. I still want to see much more housing. Nonetheless, I think Sitka is doing better than most of our communities in Alaska on this measure, even though, you know, affordability might still be a big problem.
Clauda attributed the affordability problem to a lack of land in the state, high construction costs, and out-of-date zoning laws, most of which were written when Alaska was a different kind of state.
A lot of times zoning is about protecting existing neighborhoods from change more than it is about health or safety or anything like that.
He was also unwilling to place full blame on the growth of short-term rentals for Alaska's high housing costs. Based on anecdotal data, he estimated that 3% of Sitka's housing stock was tied up in short-term rentals. Clauda felt that the short-term rental market was adapting to changes in the visitor industry faster than other types of accommodation. Clauda said he feared the short-term rental trend growing out of hand, however, and he favored imposing caps to keep them in check. You're listening to KTOO, And as for the weather, it's currently 40 degrees and raining. You're listening to KTOO. For more stories, go to ktoo.org.